Hey, we need to deal with the technology before we go any further.
Yes, Madam Chair, can we? Let's take a 5-minute recess while we figure this out.
Okay, we can start.
Can we? Madam Chair, let's take a.
We have to do is mute all everybody and then let her talk. Fine, that's all. That's the problem. Is everybody's looping through their speakers. And Kathleen's got it.
Okay, it looks like I've been unmuted. If I'm not getting the feedback, then we could go on to Jeff explaining some of the technology to us.
Okay, obviously y'all can hear some of that feedback, and that's because we have so many people who are not muted at this time, so please go ahead and mute yourself if you haven't been already. That really greatly reduces that background noise that comes from speakers and people who are not muted at this time. So please go ahead and mute yourself if you haven't been already. That really greatly reduces that background noise that comes from speakers and people who are not muted. So we're doing our best to cut that out. I think we almost got it. That really greatly reduces that background noise. All right, maybe we caught it there. And again, obviously, we are always going to have the potential for some kind of technical difficulty with so many people connecting remotely, but we are glad to have the ability to get things moving. I think we've gotten most of the feedback addressed this time. Muting everybody really helps to keep it from bouncing back through. So we should be good, but please, if you're not speaking, go ahead and mute yourself. It really does help the room. For today, the protocol is to use the raise hand feature that you see there in your participants panel. What that allows us to do is indicate, without a lot of, everybody talking on top of each other, allows us to go ahead and alert the board chair that someone wishes to be recognized, which she will be looking for on her screen, and then she'll call on you at the appropriate time. That really helps, so please use that. Again, mute everything, including cell phones. They can make a lot of noise in the background and can also be a problem for alerts, as text messages, and so forth as they come in. For members of the public who are watching from YouTube or on KUA.com, if you have something for the board, there is a contact form on KUA.com. You can see it there under the minutes page for today's meeting. That is how you would contact us to get information to the board. We will be monitoring that inbox during the meeting. If you are presenting remotely, I will be taking care of your slides for you, unless you're presenting in the room, of course. Everything else would work as normal. And if you experience any audio or visual difficulty during the meeting, the first rule is to turn off video. That a lot of times that's the biggest impact. So if you turn off video and things clear up, that's probably what it was, or your camera, and then come back in. We'll be looking if you have to disconnect and reconnect. We'll look to bring you back into the meeting. So it's absolutely fine if you feel you need to make a reconnect. And with that, I'll turn it over to Grant.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Madam Chair. Good afternoon, board members. Just wanted to establish that this board meeting is compliant with Governor DeSantis' Executive Order Number 20-112. That's his most recent executive order implementing phase one of opening in the state of Florida. In that executive order, he specifically stated in Section 6 that
we just lost Grant when he got to the 20-112.
Can you hear me at least?
Can you hear us okay?
Testing.
I can hear you. I couldn't hear Grant after he got to the 20-112.
Are you ready? Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Great. Okay. Section 6 of that order, 20-112, reestablished that executive order 20-69, in which physical quorum requirements under the Sunshine Law were waived by the governor, that is extended for the duration of this latest order. So this meeting complies with that. We've made efforts and we've made provisions for the public to participate, as is also required by the executive order, and this meeting can proceed. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And we'll move to item C, approval of the agenda. Do I have a motion to approve the agenda? Manny moved and Jeannie seconded. All those in favor, raise your hand. Everybody's in favor. We'll go to item D, except that we have moved all awards and presentations to a later date. Item E, hear the audience. Do we have any questions or comments from any members of the audience?
No, Madam Chair.
Okay. We will go to item F, the consent agenda. Do I have a motion regarding the consent agenda?
I move we accept the consent agenda.
Okay, and Manny seconded. All in favor, raise your hand. Okay, everybody's in favor, and we'll move on to G. There is no public hearing, so we will go to Susan's informational presentation.
Yes, Madam Chair. Item H1 is a report on our customer satisfaction survey that we conducted at the beginning part of last month. And to walk us through the results of that study, we have got Taylor Foss with Great Blue. Taylor, can you hear us?
Taylor just reconnected, so it'll just take a second. He must have lost his connection.
This is fun.
Stephanie was there for a second. I think he's reconnecting. He must have lost his internet feed.
And maybe we can kind of have Kevin ready in case we have to reverse orders.
Yes, Madam Chair. If it's okay with the board, we can go ahead and move to item J1, and we'll come back to item H1 when the Great Blue representative reconnects.
Everybody okay with that? Okay, that's fine.
Okay, and we've got Kevin Crawford here, Vice President of Finance and Administration, that's going to walk y'all through what we're seeing from a financial perspective as a result of the pandemic that we're experiencing right now. And Kevin?
Thank you, Brian. Madam Chair, last time that we spoke, we promised you, the board, that as this situation continued to develop, we would keep you informed of anything that we notice or observe financially or operationally. And today I'm going to share with you just a few things that we have seen preliminarily based on the 1 month that has passed that we've been able to collect financial data up to this point. And now being a little farther down the road, we have some data points that we want to share with you today. So we'll attempt to do that. Unlike every other news outlet that you have probably seen or heard for the past month or so, let me start with good news. So beginning here, you'll see that we are looking at our megawatt hour sales, and we're comparing this month, April of 2020, to April of 2019. And these are just on a month-to-month comparison, a one-month comparison. And what you really see there is that we are ahead from where we were last year at this time in terms of megawatt hour sales. We're about 9% on the month over, and on a year-to-date basis, we don't have that chart for you, but anecdotally I'll share with you that we're about 4% over where we were last year, and we're also over budget on our megawatt hour sales. So that's actually good news, and we'll talk about why that is a little bit later on, but first of all, just that bit of good information. Secondly, you'll see our revenues share a very similar story. Again, this compares the month of April for this year to the month of April in 2019. And again, we are ahead of our revenues for last year at this time. and we are also ahead of our budgeted sales at this point on a year-to-date basis as well in terms of revenue to the same almost percentage that we were on megawatt hours, about 4%. So we'll go into a little more detail. One thing you'll notice is the composition of those sales has changed a little bit between residential and commercial. And I don't think it will be a big surprise to anyone as we step into the reasons for that. But we'll get into that in a moment. But for now, increase in sales, megawatt hours, and a commensurate increase in revenues from this time to at the same time last year. And so then moving into the customer number, clicker's not working all of a sudden, Jeff, on this one. Okay. On the customer side, we have seen an increase in the number of customers, and that's part of the reason that we have seen an increase in sales. It's not the primary reason, but we're at about 80,200 right now in April of this year compared to April of last year at 77,000. So we've increased by about 3,200 customers or 4% since this same time last year. So here's really sort of the big story with how we end up where we are in terms of sales. It's largely related to weather. And these are the heating and combined heating and cooling degree days. We talk about this. This is sort of a term we use a lot. But basically what these numbers equate to is you take for every day in the month, you take the average temperature of that day. You start with the high and the low. You divide that by two. You add those together, divide it by two. That gives you the average temperature for that day. You compare that to 65 degrees. And for every degree that is over 65, that's a cooling degree day. And every degree under 65, that's a heating degree day. And when you add those two numbers together, you'll get the total heating and cooling degree days for a given month. And that serves as a really strong indicator of sales because, generally speaking, the higher the temperature, the more air conditioners run, and it's obvious that's the more sales that we would realize as well. And so that's really the story related to this year to last year. More customers, more combined heating and cooling degree days, and therefore more sales. So on the residential side, we'll sort of look into the details behind how those sales are breaking out. What we see here is a residential use per customer, and this is just KWH use per customer basis. And what you're looking on the block chart, you're seeing a comparison from this year to last year of the heating and cooling degree days. And if you look at the blocks in the bottom or the bar graphs, you see the yellow is way higher than the black. And basically that is similar to what you saw a couple of slides ago. We have basically just more heating and cooling degree days, more requirements for energy, and that translates into more sales. Now, the interesting thing that you'll see here is because of the timing of how we bill our customers, and you are probably all aware of this because you get your bill in the following month for the energy that you consumed in the prior month. And because of that, when we report May sales, April sales, that is largely dependent on March's weather. So a big percentage of our sales for a current month relates back to the weather of the preceding month. And so the April revenues that we see here, the increase in usage, the yellow line now at the top for 20, is largely correlated on the residential side with the increase yellow block that you see at the bottom over the black, which is an increase in heating and cooling degree days, which makes sense. So what we expect to see then in May, if you're thinking ahead and if things hold true as they should, all things being equal, because, again, we have a higher yellow bar than we do a black bar in April, you should see that yellow line continue to increase for the month of May on residentials. Now, there could be an additional reason for this, and we'll look at the commercial side, but on the residential, we think that probably this increase relates to weather and customers, but as you all know, a lot of people are working from home. A lot of these cooling and heating and energy sales that we typically would see on commercial, folks are being at home all day, they're running the air conditioner, they're using their ovens or whatever they're doing, they're not eating out, and so we're seeing a lot of the sales on the residential side increase. So the weather doesn't account for all of it. Typically, it accounts for most of it. But what we think is happening here, additionally, because of the pandemic, is people are staying home and they're running their TVs. And as you all have been a part of that, I'm sure we all have. And we are all hunkering down. And so that's why we think we're seeing an increase in residential sales. So that's been the good news up to this point. Everything has been good stuff. So let's kind of get into what maybe might not be such good indicators. So we have three commercial classes of customers. We're going to look at them all. They all basically tell the same story that we would expect to see. And basically, this first category of commercial customers looking at, this is called general service users, and these are small commercial customers. These are storefronts in strip malls, small restaurants, and things of that nature. And normally with the weather that we saw for the month of March, you would expect to see that April line at the top do just what it did for residential. You would think it would have increased in those sales. But as you can see here, that is not the case. And I don't think it's any leap in logic to try to get to the reason why that is. Again, your smaller restaurants, your storefronts have all been shuttered periodically, and that's why we're not seeing that same amount of sales on the general service or the small commercial customers, and this is one we're looking at here, that we saw on the residential side. So as you would expect, even with weather, we're still not getting the bump in sales that we would have expected. So let's move then to the general demand. And these are a little bit larger customers. These are the schools. This is the county and the city. These include the schools, among other customers, but that's sort of the size. They're our biggest customer in this class. The county and the city administration buildings and things of that nature. Again, sort of the same story. Our April 2020 sales, 29,713, compared to 2019 of 30,000. So not a small increase, actually, even given the increase in weather days here. So our small commercial, and also here you see our mid-size general demand customers also seeing the same fate as some of those. And obviously the schools aren't open, so they're not running their air conditioning and they're not using their equipment. And so this is sort of what you would expect to see even with respect to weather. And finally, this is our large commercial, our last class of commercial here, usage per customer. These are the bigger grocery stores. These would be your big box stores. This group includes the local hospitals. And so we see a little bit of an increase this year over last year. We're at about 230,000 kWhs for this class compared to 221 last year. So a small increase, but even with the weather, again, these don't correlate the same way they do on the residential side. And again, it's not a big leap in logic to know why that is the case. And so it's sort of telling us the story that we all have expected to see based on what we're seeing in the news media, what we're hearing through folks that we talk to, through our customers, is that the large commercial classes are suffering to some degree, and the residential is still being utilized because folks are being at home and working from home. Moving then into sort of the punchline of the not-so-good news. So we've only been at this for about a month or so, 2 months. And what you're seeing here are customers that are eligible for interruption graphed from this year to last year. So for 2020 are the yellow lines, consistent with what you've seen in previous graphs. The yellow is this year. The black is last year. And every one of these lines represents a day of the week, Monday through Friday, a business day. And so that's why they don't always overlap this year to last year, because some days fall on weekends. But these are days that customers are eligible for interruption in these groups. And so what you're looking at is a pretty substantial increase in that number. As of May 1st, that number was 4,751 customers that were eligible for interruption, compared to last year of about 1,800. So you see a very significant increase. Now, I do want to let you know here that about 3,100 of this 4,700 customers are currently in active payment arrangements. And so even though the KUA has voluntarily suspended interruptions in service for non-payment, we are seeing folks exponentially increase in those numbers, and our folks are working out payment arrangements with our customer service staff. I really have to stop a minute here and commend Susan's group for being so proactive in reaching out and working with our customers on conservation, helping them make these arrangements, helping them stay ahead of these bills, because they do represent a significant portion of our customers' incomes to a large extent. And when the money's not coming in, obviously it's a real challenge for them. And so we've been very sensitive to that, and Susan's group has been very proactive in trying to help them work at it. So I think it's a credit to the efforts that they're going through, that about 3,300 of those, or excuse me, 3,100 of these 4,700 are engaged in payment arrangements of some type. Nonetheless, even though folks might be in arrangements, as we know, the economic situation that we're looking at is improving somewhat, but we don't know how effective that will be. And so that money is still basically at risk until it gets paid. And as we've shared with you, revenues don't always equal cash. And so because of that, this is what we really are taking a close look at, is what we're seeing on the folks who are in arrangements and eligible for interruption. The other side of that, that's the customer numbers. Now let's look at the dollar values. Looking in, the yellow compared to the black is 2020 compared to last year. And for each of these days, what you see is a cumulative increase since the beginning of the pandemic to the balances associated with those previous customers that I showed you on the previous graph. This is the balance of those accounts that are owed to KUA that would currently be eligible for interruption is $1.4 million. Now, of that 1.4, almost 720,000, so that's about half or so, of those customers are in a payment arrangement status. So the 3,100 customers I told you on the previous graph were in active payment arrangements. That's the value of $700,000 is what that represents, and those are folks that we are working with now to get payment arrangements to work out for them. We continue to work with our customers to try to be sensitive to what they're going through. We have suspended a significant, I think, the fees that we normally charge. I think to date, that number, KUA has foregone about $115,000 in late fees that we would typically be collecting. And that number is not reflected in any of these graphs. We have that on, we share that with executive staff every week as part of our update. But just so you know, we are being proactive in trying to work with our customers and do the very best we can to keep them on track to pay their utility bills. I'm happy to answer any questions that you might have at this time.
I got a question.
Yes, sir.
Do you know the interruption customers, how many of them, if you know, have taken advantage or with the program that we have, we sponsored at the Osceola Council on Aging?
Brian.
Director Ortega, we've had 326 customers that have utilize the funding that was available through the Good Neighbor Fund. After the last board meeting, there was about y'all authorized the use of $50,000 from our sponsorship fund, and then there was another $20,000 or $21,000, totaling about $71,000. All of those funds have been dispersed from the Council on Aging. Now, as you know, the contributions that are made to that fund are made on a monthly basis. So the contributions that were contributed in April will soon be made available to customers in May.
Excellent. Thank you.
Any other questions or comments?
All right, just a comment. Great presentation. I had a bunch of questions, but he answered them all. So, Kevin, great job.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
So now we'll back up.
Madam Chair, it looks like Director Urbina has a question.
Okay, sorry. Ethel, you're going to have to unmute yourself.
I can hear myself. Can you hear me? Of all the people that are on payment arrangements, are they actually making payments? Is it too recent to tell?
Some have made payments. I don't have specific numbers, Director Urbina, as to, you know, what the amounts and how many have made payments on the arrangements that are set up. But it's something that we can certainly get firmer data and share with the board.
Any other questions or comments? And Ray, I can't see you, so if you have a question or a comment, unmute yourself and ask it. Okay, hearing nothing, then shall we go back to Taylor and the customer service survey?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Yeah.
We have Taylor on the phone.
Yes, yeah, I am back. It seems like I got booted there, but I ended up getting back in, so we are good to go.
Okay, will you walk us through your presentation, please?
All right, well, first of all, thank you for having me, and I hope everyone's doing well. My name is Taylor Foss. I'm a project manager at Great Blue Research. We're located in Glastonbury, Connecticut. We've been doing the customer satisfaction study with you all for a few years now, so we do have some great tracking data to go through today, as well as the 2020 data. You can just jump to the next slide. So just a brief overview of what we're going to hit today. Essentially, we're going to touch on, in section one, a quick project overview that gets into the research methodology and the turnout in terms of respondents. Then we'll go into the key study findings from a high-level perspective, specifically geared towards residential customers. Then we'll hit the same thing for commercial customers. And finally, we'll finish off with a sort of what would we do in your shoes, considerations and recommendations based on data analysis and our expertise in the industry of the utility field. All right, so for the residential survey specifically, the methodology was over the phone. We received 400 completes. The survey was 65 questions max. Essentially, some respondents could answer less questions if, for instance, they had not had an interaction with a customer service representative or a field service representative. They would have skipped over those particular questions. There was no incentive received. We used the customer sample list provided by KUA. Again, the target was residential customers. The margin of error is 4.85 with a confidence level of 95%, and the research was conducted between March 2nd and 10th.
We're on page 4.
Next slide, please. Got it. Could you go to the previous one? Perfect. Thank you. For the commercial segment, it was, again, a telephone methodology. We received 101 completes. There were 62 questions with that caveat of logic skips, the same as the residential survey. Again, there was no incentive received, and the customer list was provided by you all. As you can see down here on the margin of error, it was 9.71, so slightly higher based on the smaller sample size. The research dates were between March 2nd and 5th. All right, so now we'll dive into the residential key study findings, sort of a high-level overview, almost the meat and bones of the survey itself. I know we have some time constraints here, so the aggregate report does have a little more in-depth analysis, but these are sort of the high-level findings. So we can jump into company characteristics ratings, where we saw across 8 company characteristics rating, 6 increased from 2019. The most substantial increases were in helping customers use less electricity and being open and honest about company operations and policies. So what we do here is respondents have the opportunity to rate each of the organizational characteristics on a scale of 1 to 10. We then take what we call a top two box, which would be ratings from 7 to 10, and we remove people who answered don't know or unsure to any particular question. So as you can see here, we had an increase in frequencies across the board, which precipitated a 91.5% average positive rating. Looking at those same organizational characteristics, we compare them to our public power data source, which is a national survey we conduct quarterly among other public utilities, electric utilities specifically. As you can see in the data here on the left side, we have the 2020 KUA residential frequencies. And if you move over, it's the state of Florida, the national averages. And you can obviously see here that you all scored extremely high in reference to the state as well as the national averages. The largest differences were seen in helping customers use less electricity and overall satisfaction with KUA. So again, that's that 91.5% average positive rating, which you can see if you look to the right. The average positive rating for the state of Florida is 67.5 and 70% for the national average. So that's a great number to look at. Something to keep in mind here, and it's the correlation that we see among utilities from a nationwide perspective, first contact resolution is strongly correlated with satisfaction, whether it be residential or commercial customer base. Looking here at the residential customers specifically, we saw a substantial marked increase in first contact resolution for KUA takes care of things the first time, reaching 89.1%. So when we look at those customers specifically, those 89.1% who said that KUA takes care of things the first time, we see on the bottom left here, their residential customer satisfaction increases from that 91.5% to 98.4%. So there's a strong correlation between customer service, taking care of the things the first time, and overall satisfaction. Moving on to the corporate culture characteristics, we looked at five different things, including level of involvement in the community, honesty in conducting business, accountability for its actions, well-managed utility, and a company you can trust. You can see here that there was a slight decline in the mean scores, and the largest decline was for level of involvement in the community. Nothing to go crazy about, no fires to put out here. Something to keep in mind is that we do see a sort of sentiment among residential respondents and commercial respondents as well, where there isn't necessarily a high expectation among electric utilities when it comes to community involvement and philanthropic endeavors and things like that. But there was a noted decrease in the mean scores there. All right, so moving on to the commercial segment, we'll touch on some of those key findings. We can jump right into company characteristic ratings for the commercial population. So as you can see here, it's the same questions they were asked to the business segment. The commercial and industrial segment had a slight decrease from the previous year. We saw 7 of the 8 characteristics decline slightly, with the largest declines in helping customers use less electricity and community involvement. So you can see there, there's a sort of trend where community involvement declined for both residential and commercial customers with respect to KUA's involvement within the community and helping customers use electricity as well. Again, here we see the correlation between first contact resolution and satisfaction. Although on the bottom left here, you can see that there was that strong correlation of 91.3% overall satisfaction with first contact resolution. First contact resolution did decline among the commercial segment in 2020 from 83% to 74.5%. Something to bear in mind is sort of analyzing potential reasons for that decline and also looking into reasons why the residential section is rating this particular question so much better than the commercial segment. All right, so similar to the residential segment, we see that the mean scores for corporate culture characteristics did decline slightly from 2019 ratings. The most notable declines, again, were level of involvement in the community and Yes, so that was the largest decrease, which precipitated the average decline to 8.76, something to keep in mind when analyzing the results. So this last key study finding slide is an aggregate company characteristic rating. Essentially, what we did here is we combined the 400 residential respondents with the 101 commercial respondents for a sort of composite analysis of the particular organizational characteristics. So you can see with the N value of 400 and 101, we get up to obviously 501. And when combining these two segments, we still see a very high average positive rating of 90%, much higher than the national average and the state average as well. The three highest ratings were being open and honest about company operations and policies, maintaining modern and reliable infrastructure, and overall satisfaction with KUA. All right, so to wrap it up, what we like to do at the end of our data and analysis is sort of offer a few recommendations that we have based on years of experience in the utility field and the data itself, as well as tracking data. The first point here is to investigate first contact resolution. As we see, this is a national correlation. I had mentioned before that overall satisfaction is strongly correlated to contact resolution. Based on the data, it seems as though residential respondents are more than thrilled with KUA taking care of things on the first time. Excuse me. So what we're recommending here is that you all both analyze what's going well and what potential gaps there are in the commercial segment in order to sort of close that gap, increase commercial satisfaction with respect to contact resolution. The second piece here is quite similar to the first piece with respect to kind of analyzing both segments and comparing and contrasting gaps, strengths, and weaknesses. Essentially, we're looking to analyze company characteristic ratings. We saw a large variance between the residential population and the commercial population. So it's important to keep in mind what's going well between the two segments, what sort of overlaps and what doesn't. I know there's some things that inevitably don't necessarily overlap, but it's something to keep in mind. And the last consideration that we have is to evaluate marketing communication efforts. I had spoken with some of the staff, and it seems as though the customer engagement efforts, including an increase in KUA sponsored events, did increase in 2019. Comparatively, the mean scores for level of involvement in the community declined. So there's obviously a discrepancy between the community efforts and the sentiment towards level of involvement in the community. In order to attack this problem head on, we're recommending that you evaluate marketing communication efforts with respect to events, funds, the Good Neighbor Fund, things like that. The idea here is that by increasing awareness and impressions, it will likely have a positive impact on overall sentiment and perception of the utility as a whole. And further, it could potentially increase corporate culture ratings moving forward. All right, so that will do it. I know I kept it quick and brief, but I wanted to give some time for a quick Q&A at the end, so I'll open it up to any questions anyone might have.
I have a question. Can you hear me?
Yes, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Can some of the corporate uneasiness go to what's been happening in this past, in the first quarter, in that they don't feel that they're in great shape just with their businesses, and it might carry over to how they feel towards their bills?
So it's a great point, and we, at the top of the presentation, I offered sort of the dates where we held fielding, and we like to keep that in mind because there's instances like the COVID pandemic where that can have an effect. We're currently offering two different utilities a sort of survey to analyze the current sentiment and perception regarding COVID, and we are finding that there is a sort of uneasiness, so that those ratings could definitely have been impacted by the sort of timing of the fielding. That's a great point.
The reason I'm saying that is because we're out in the community as much, if not more, than we have been, and that there shouldn't be any difference in how people are reacting to us because we haven't stopped doing what we've always done. So It's kind of a question mark to me why you would be having that reaction.
But they asked the questions the first few days of March. So that was before all this started happening. So the questions, the answers shouldn't have been particularly influenced by the pandemic.
That's correct. So there's a few things to keep in mind with the mean scores, especially when we're looking at the commercial segment. It was early on in the COVID pandemic, that early March, and it's still very much up in the air. Another thing to keep in mind is the sample size is 101. So when we get to that larger margin of error, there is an opportunity for the fluctuation in results based on that margin.
Can you hear me?
You calling? Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, Ethel, wait a minute and then unmute yourself. Manny's going to go first.
Okay, my only comment is that on the we're probably looking at different individuals every year when we make these phone calls. So I like to look at the overall. That's the number that's really interesting to me. And we were at like a 95 and 90, 95 with the residential and 90 with commercial. The other ones that are lower, it could be something that the individual was going through the month. In a small survey, two or three respondents that are not favorable could really make a big difference in the number. So I believe that overall, we will continue to do a great job in the community.
Yeah, no, I think it's a great point. And again, that 101 sample size for the commercial segment in particular offers up that 9.7 margin of error. So it's a good point that one sort of disgruntled opinion has more of an effect than, say, if we were to sample 1,000 people, right? But yeah, it's something to definitely keep in mind. And I think overall the story goes that your satisfaction ratings are extremely high, especially considering the national average. And the level of involvement in community is something to keep in mind and maybe track on in further studies. But it's no fire to put out by any means. I would totally agree with that.
Okay, Ethel, if you'll unmute yourself. Nope, you're not unmuted. We can't hear you. Still can't hear you, Ethel.
Because I don't see.
Now we can hear you. Let me get off.
You know? Can you hear me now?
I am. Yes.
Okay, I'm only listening in. I cannot see anything because I don't see anybody or myself. But I was thinking that, number one, there is a possibility that the people that were surveyed are new customers, not familiar with KUA and the activities that KUA has done so well for so many months in the past. Number two, that is also possible that some of them expected us to get more involved about COVID-19. I don't know what else they expected from us to go out there and do, but it's possible that that's what they expected. And number three, that there are different people from any other times and very, very small sample of the customer base. So I'm very surprised about their comments. I expected that to be the best thing that we do and be rated as the best. But
Madam Chair, I would like to offer, you know, we late last year and early this year, you may recall, we were dealing with a very difficult position around the holidays with one of our commercial customers that also was very public and out in the news. Y'all may recall I spoke to y'all about that. I'm not sure what impact, if any, that played, but certainly I'm concerned, and I think we all are. We're going to work on our outreach, in particular with respect to our commercial customers in the year ahead.
Any other questions or comments? Let me ask Ray first. Ray, have you got a question or comment?
No.
Okay. Back up to Jeannie then.
Right. Well, Brian, do you think there's anything that we've failed to do that would, of course, I don't think this is bad, tell you the truth. I think we still have very good results from this, but how do you feel about it? Do you feel that it's
concerned? I feel that our numbers are very strong, both within the region and nationally. You know, our numbers are so much higher than the benchmarks that I'm very comfortable. That being said, anytime we see a decrease in anything, I think it's natural for us to ask why.
And try to
address whatever concerns we're able to gather from our customers.
Thank you.
Okay, any other questions or comments? Now I can see Ray, but I can't see Manny. So Manny will have to let me know if he has something to say. Are we ready to move on to the next item, staff reports?
Yes, Madam Chair. We've got two staff reports this afternoon. The first is our DDD presentation. As I mentioned to you all this year, we didn't have our traditional disaster drill day, as you can imagine, but we did do some tabletop exercise and tried to incorporate some of the lessons that we've learned thus far, and as it relates to this pandemic, and try to position ourselves in the very best position to be prepared to respond to the ongoing pandemic, but also the quickly approaching hurricane season. And to walk us through that presentation, I'm going to ask Mr. Jeff Gray, Vice President of IT.
Thank you, Brian. As you know, as Brian said, each year we do a drill, and we're very aggressive with our drilling. It always came with me from my prior military experience that we would just the worst day ever, and try to combine as many broken and debilitating situations and scenarios as we could to normal operations, and try to simulate what it would be like in something such as a severe storm. Or in more modern terms, things that have emerged as just as bad as a severe storm, such as a cybersecurity incident that has locked the utility or the municipal down, or now what we see with the pandemic, where we've had to rethink multiple channels, multiple ways of doing things that were just always done a certain way, and now you have to do them remotely, as an example, the board meeting or any other daily operation. And so if you had to go through that, and more importantly, if you had to layer those events, such as a hurricane and a pandemic, or a pandemic and a cybersecurity incident, how would you go about that, and what would be the way to work it out in your mind so that you could say, here's what we'll do, or here's how we can creatively solve the problems as they come up? We normally do that as a drill, but this year, because of the pandemic, it really wasn't something we could do easily to bring people together when you've got to have social distancing and all the other things, as you can imagine. How do we do a drill with people in the same room to do first aid, for example, or go through some of the other scenarios? So we're already in the pandemic drill, and we have been for months now, but there are things we could learn. So we did an assessment rather than a drill. We had each department take back a series of questions, and they have been compiled into a report that will be made available to you if you have not already received it. And what I'm going to go through now is just a quick run-through of what the highlights were of the assessment, and then I'll take your questions. Starting off, of course, for our amazing line crews, every day is a drill day for our line crews. They are forever, restoring and dealing with whatever could happen, from trees on lines to, a car hitting a pole, and, of course, just building out our service territory. So in terms of our line operations, they've made the adjustments very quickly to what they needed in terms of personal protective gear and so forth. But for storm season specifically, we are ready in terms of resources, training, experience, everything that is needed for us, and all the plans have been reviewed. We are absolutely ready for storm season, and whether it be in conjunction with a cybersecurity incident or more pandemic changes to our lifestyles, they're ready, which is great news. In looking at the cybersecurity incident, again, we've all seen the headlines that come with this and how a city can be brought to its knees when a municipal system is hacked or ransomed, or some of the other things such as an exposure of data that, you know, brings a ton of responsibilities of going back to customers and explaining what's been released and so forth, and how that can really shut down a lot of normal operations. In terms of KUA and its preparedness, again, the layering, the ability to solve this while solving other problems, not a problem for us. We've always drilled very heavy. We are actively now defending against all threats that come to our firewall. We have built the advanced threat protection systems that I've told you about in previous presentations. We also have the third-party intrusion testing that's done by the U.S. government to make sure that we haven't missed anything, or if something new has come out that we did not know existed yesterday, that they're already looking for that and letting us know if we have any vulnerabilities. And then they track the cure time for that, so they're very aggressive in making sure we stay on task. And most importantly, the employee training, because one person clicking something that's nefarious can, of course, start a million-dollar click, so to speak. So we also do that as well. So I feel very comfortable with our cybersecurity preparedness, both in terms of it by itself and in the layering of dealing with that and a hurricane or COVID. Speaking of COVID, a health crisis, a pandemic, not our first time looking at this in just of recent days. We've actually gone back many years ago and looked at this back when the avian flu was a concern. We wrote some plans at that time and did some educating ourselves and some of the staff on what we needed to know, what we needed to think about. Of course, it does present certain key issues when you get into the resources you need, such as personal protective gear, having that available, how much hand sanitizer can you get your hands on at one time when everybody wants it at the same time. That those types of things, of course, were somewhat new. We have also, of course, looked at all of the sustainability. Can we send people home and have them work effectively, not just say, can they go home and work for a day, but can they sustain that? Other utilities that I've heard from during this pandemic time have had access to resource issues. They mainly had the typical desktop computers. They were not running laptops per se. We realized years back that we really wanted to have everybody on somewhat of a laptop standard for this very reason, because when you send people home the night before a hurricane, or maybe it's something like this, we would rather all the resources be dispersed through the service territory rather than have them all in one place where there may be a fire or some other damage that now renders your computer abilities, mute. So we wanted to have that spread out. We've built that out over the years. We do appreciate the board following our suggestions on going with a standard for laptops and mobile computing more than fixed, and that's served us very well during COVID. I'll share some numbers with you in a minute on how many folks are actually working from home. And so with all of that, we've handled it well. Operations have continued quite smoothly. Of course, it's better to have folks face-to-face communications, a little more optimal. And just in general, we're used to working that way. But we have been able to get through this and sustain it over a period of time, which I think is a great success. And currently, we are working on the back-to-work plan. There is a lot to that. We don't just open our doors and say it's over. There are many sort of posturing steps we need to go through before we can do that, following both the state, the governor's guidelines, local county ordinances, and so forth. All of that has to be taken into account, as well as, of course, the best practices in terms of health and prevention. So that's all being done as well, and we're efforting that as we speak. A quick look at the numbers. A lot of resources that make up KUA. These are just some highlight numbers here on the left. We have more poles, more transmission, more service territory to serve in terms of our resources every year. We do track those numbers and just try to reflect and see how it's growing. But those resources are all accounted for, ready to go, and actively being used. The years of experience, I thought, was an interesting number there on the right-hand side. You know, that is a phenomenal number when you look at how many years of pure KUA experience that we have, 3,400 years of experience, ready to go and serve our customers, keep the lights on, and be reliable in times of storms or any other thing that may come our way. The workforce, we wanted to just point out how many folks had to unexpectedly head home. We had a small group, of course, as you know, in customer service that worked from home exclusively. That was expanded, of course, 56 of those 293 personnel now working from home every day of the week, and 115 on modified work schedules where they may come in one day a week and work the rest of the week from home. So a little over a third of our workforce was able to quickly transition from office to home and, again, perform all of their duties admirably and keep everything running smoothly. And with that, I will take any questions that you may have.
Anybody have any questions? Okay. Thanks a lot, Jeff. And we'll move on to Chris.
Yes, Madam Chair. We've got Chris Gent, Vice President.
Good afternoon. This is my semi-annual report, and if you recall the last report I gave last year, we talked about social media, and one big component of social media is the use of video. So I wanted to just touch base on how KUA is using video to educate and inform our customers. You're probably all familiar with the growing use of video, but I put some statistics together just to give you a sense of scale. You know, YouTube is now one-third of the total internet users now on the internet are using YouTube, and it's now the second largest search engine in the world. More and more people, as they look to do something, change a filter, repair their dryer, repair their refrigerator, they're looking to YouTube for videos on education. 100 and 500 million hours of video are watched on YouTube each day. 45% of the people watch more than an hour of Facebook or YouTube videos per week. And more video content is uploaded in 30 days than the major U.S. networks have created in the last 30 years. And the ideal length for videos is 2 minutes long, get the most engagement, mainly because that allows that video to be shared on all social media platforms. The benefits for us and for KUA using video is everyone consumes information differently. Some prefer to read things in print. Some prefer to read things on their phones. But video allows us to cross all those different platforms and just reach people where they are. Video is super easy to share. It's actually shared 12 times more than something in print. It caters to the mobile world. More and more people are watching the videos on their phones, and we take advantage of closed captioning, and also we'll put text on videos when we post it to social platforms so that people, when they mute their phones, can still get the intent of the video. Obviously, videos appeal to emotions because of their powerful audio and visual elements. We can tell a story much better than we can in print. And they can also be recycled, and we do this often where we will go out and we'll shoot video of our community solar farm, and then we can edit that and use it in several different videos. So how we use it at KUA, and you've probably seen these in a variety of formats, but education, safety, conservation, board recruitment, construction project updates, customer programs, community events, recognition for the utility, scams, which is a frequent education that we use, and also live events. In the past year, we've uploaded 118 total videos to share with our customers. So I just wanted to have a couple slides here to talk about the impact of those videos, those 118 videos. So total minutes viewed over the past year was 229,930 minutes. That was up 55% over the previous year. And we're at 80% organic. And by organic, we mean that we just put the video out there and it takes off on its own and people share it without any help from us. paid is where we have a specific message that we want to drive home, so we can boost it and we can allow that to automatically be put in more people's feed, and that helps gain traction at a quicker pace. You'll see at the chart below that our largest spike was during Hurricane Dorian last September, and that so you can kind of see how that spiked, people really looking for information during that time. Also on the right there, you can see the top five videos were related to Hurricane Dorian, and then we did a balloon safety video and the Public Power Day of Giving. So that's total minutes viewed. Next, we have total views. We had 667,000 views, which was up 36%. Again, you can see from the chart that Hurricane Dorian was our primary driver for video views last year. And then we had a shift there between the Day of Giving and Mother's Day balloon safety. And then under engagement, an engagement means that if somebody sees a video and they either share it or they comment or they like it or they do something with it other than just watching it. That was up 117% from the previous year. And we had 16,243 shares of our videos. And again, the top five most shared videos in last year were all Hurricane Dorian related. So this is a big thing, net followers. And why we track this is, ideally, when we show a video, we produce a video, we share it. But ideally, we want people, customers, to follow us, follow KUA online, so that the next time we release a video, they'll be sure to see it. So in the last year, we gained net followers, almost 6,000 new followers because of videos that we posted. That was up 131% from the previous year. You can see, again, we had a big spike during Hurricane Dorian, but we also had a big spike early on in the hurricane season when we released our hurricane guide and had a lot of video information online about hurricane season. So that was a spike at the beginning of the year. So looking ahead looking back at the whole year, this is a synopsis of the top 20 videos that we shared and or produced. And this takes out all the hurricane related and just with it, with the different topics other than hurricanes. And you can see there's a wide variety of everything from community events to how we restore power to energy saving tips. So there's a wide range of things. We do it also for educating. We have a video, too, that we produced on acclimating people to our new AMI portal. So I wanted to just show a quick, I've got four short videos. They're all about 45 seconds. But just in case you haven't seen them on our social channels, I just want to give you a sampling of just some of the videos that we've produced in the past year. Okay, we tested it before, but we can be sure to send the links out to you just so that you can see those videos. Oh, so the last slide that I had that I just wanted to bring to your attention is, you know, as part of KUA's strategic plan, that involvement in the community events, we have a benchmark that we've set of 17 events for this fiscal year. This calendar year. And obviously, we've been greatly impacted by the cancellations due to the coronavirus. So new event protocols are being established. Matter of fact, I was just on the phone today with the city trying to see where they are in terms of establishing new protocol for events. We just wanted to bring this to your attention, that we do have that target out there. We're going to continue to work really hard to be creative in how we attempt to reach that goal. We're still striving for that goal, but knowing that we're going to go potentially months and months with no community events, the impacts there could be potential impacts at the end of the year, and we just wanted you to be aware of that now. So with that, if you have any questions, I'm happy to help answer.
Jeannie?
If these events are canceled, do we save money on that, or do we still...
Yes.
How is that going to work?
Yes, we do. On events that we're at, we save both on setup, the expenses of the setup, but we also set up on the employee time that's spent working the events. So, yes, there is savings in that way.
Can we eke out a little of it and give it to the Good Neighbor Fund?
That's your call.
It's something to think about.
Yeah. Any other questions or comments?
I know I've been watching a lot of video on how to make a mask.
Yeah.
They ain't pretty, but they work.
And Manny, I can't see you, so do you have a question? Okay, hearing nothing from Manny, I'll assume he doesn't. And thank you, Chris.
Thank you, and I wanted to thank you for all your participation. A lot of these videos, and one of the videos that we were going to show was each of you have been involved in shooting these videos that help inform our customers. And I know it might not be your favorite thing to do, but I know our customers appreciate it, and they always look nice, and we get a lot of traffic with them. So thank you for your part in making those videos successful.
Sure. Moving on to L, here the attorney.
Thank you, Madam Chair, board members. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Great.
Yes.
Excellent. I'll proceed. So I'm going to begin with a piece of potentially good news out of Jacksonville. If you've seen the news reports, JEA has a new board of directors, and they have come out very strongly that they are a public power utility in the state of Florida and intend to remain so. They also asked their just recently departed CEO, Melissa Dykes, about FMEA membership, and she indicated that they were in discussions with FMEA, as you all in early February had attended that meeting and saw. Along these lines, the new interim CEO is Paul McElroy, their previous CEO of many years, and a friend of public power, and all indications coming from Jacksonville are that they are going to be coming back into the fold. And so today the FMEA board of directors voted to welcome JEA back in once Amy Zubley and JEA CEO work out the details. So that's potentially very good news for public power in the state of Florida and for all of us. Secondly, the governor, as you know, just issued a phase one reopening of the state economy. It went into effect on Monday, and I mentioned how that impacted our lack of a physical quorum today, that we are allowed to do that under his order. However, the reopening task force that the governor formed in phase two, which is the next phase, I wanted to alert you that it does call for restoration of the in-person quorum requirement, and that there will be no more than 50 people allowed in attendance at meetings. I want to let you know that our section of the bar, the city, county, and local government section of the bar, has some concerns about doing that in phase two. I believe that those will be voiced at the appropriate channels, but that might be coming down the pike, so I just wanted to keep you informed on that. And finally, a legislative update out of Washington. Congress just passed, while we've been out over the past month, Congress passed a fourth COVID-19 relief bill. It's supposed to open up more money for small businesses, truly small businesses. Outside of that, the bill itself has no impact, direct impact on KUA. However, things have been happening with regard to the third COVID-19 relief bill that was called the CARES Act. And in that bill, there was a lot of money, almost $500 billion set aside potentially for state and local government. The Treasury Department issued regulations indicating that that money would only be available to cities and counties that have a minimum population of a million people. So that doesn't benefit us directly. But we are getting indications from APPA in Washington that the Federal Reserve may reconsider that and make what's called this municipal liquidity facility, that's where all the money's being housed, available on the basis of revenues backed by bonds. And we qualify as a utility, as a municipal government entity that has revenues backed by bonds. They're looking at thresholds. I don't think the smallest utilities will be available, but they did mention a APPA mentioned a potential $200 million threshold, which would include us. We're right at the cusp of that. So maybe there will be money available to us to help us get through what we're all... Yes, I have a,
no,
a
you question. You can finish. I have a question when you're done.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Maybe there will be some money available to us to deal with a potential liquidity crisis. The other thing that's happened is that the original CARES Act does allow small businesses that qualify for loans to use up to 25% of their loans for their utility bills. So that might be something that's able to help us as well. One other thing that's happening with regard to that money, apparently the state will be getting money that can be accessed by utilities like ourselves, by cities like Kissimmee. The state will get that. That means we have to work with the governor's office. And our folks in Tallahassee, our lobbyists with FMEA, they are in active talks with the governor's office. They told us to stay cautiously optimistic that the governor's office is aware that this money may be available to help cities and city utilities like KUA to get through this crisis. We have not been told no, that nothing's going to be available to you. So we just have to stand pat and see if both the Treasury and through then the Federal Reserve Department will make money available if we feel we need to access it, and if the state will do so as well. Finally, there is quite a bit of movement in the House of Representatives to impose a six-month moratorium on disconnections for failure to pay after the crisis is declared over. APPA is working on that issue and is reminding Congress that, okay, if you're going to keep us from collecting monies that are owed, you have to find a way to help us finance operations and meet operating expenses, because our linemen, our power plant operators, our system operators, our call center folks, our IT folks need to be paid so we can keep the power on. You can't just say you can't cut people off and provide no financing to the utilities involved. So there's a lot going on, and there's a lot of uncertainty. But I understand Director Van Meter had a question, Madam Chair.
Yes, please. First of all, the first one is, why would we not want to open our meetings? You had said that we just weren't too sure we wanted to do that. I would think we would be very happy to open our meetings again. And the second one is, as far as the money's concerned, I hope we don't go after this money unless we absolutely need it. I don't think that that's the right thing to do. I think we ought to be very cautious, just because there's money there, not just go to the well, and only if we really need it. Those are the two things I wanted to say.
First of all, what was stated by some members of the section I belong to, the city, county, and local government section, was that there were folks that were concerned that a lot of elected officials in this state and appointed officials are either 65 and over or have underlying conditions, and basically forcing them to go and meet in public and to could be a problem. The other thing is that 50 people, we don't know where the virus is going to go. There are indications that things are quieting down. There are other indications that they're getting worse. 50 people in this boardroom, it might be pretty hard to maintain our 6 feet of recommended social distancing. So that's the concern of the city, county, and local government section. Not that we desire to keep the public out, but that we desire to keep our policymakers healthy and to keep the members of the public healthy. The second thing is, knowing our CFO, I don't see us going hat in hand anywhere unless we absolutely need it. But if we're gonna, if we're not going to be able to utilize normal collection efforts to collect monies that are owed to us because people through no fault of their own can't pay us, there could be cash flow issues. Every organization has to meet operating expenses, and you need money to do that. So if there is a shortage and that money's available, that's just another option potentially for us down the road.
Well, that was my comment, only if we have to use it.
Any other questions or comments? Yes, Ray.
Okay. With the disconnections that you were speaking to, are they both for residential and commercial customers?
My understanding is the moratorium is for residential only.
Residents only? Okay.
And Ethel, I can't see you at this point. If you have a question or comment, please unmute yourself. Okay, hearing nothing from Ethel, we'll move on to Brian.
Yes, and I'll be brief. I just want to recognize our employees that have done a phenomenal job. Jeff kind of touched on this earlier in his presentation. The manner in which they were able to adjust and adapt to the circumstances so quickly and still provide the level of service that our customers expect. I'm extremely proud. I'm also very pleased to announce that none of our employees have been impacted by this virus, and so that's a testament to how serious they're taking it and the precautions that they're taking. Here are your reminders, your board reminders. There's a lot of cancellations there. You can see that. The only other thing that I would add is, you know, as we use technology and Zoom, we're going to have challenges. So if there's anything that you feel that you missed, the presentations that were presented today are on the SharePoint site and available to each board member, both the DDD, the customer satisfaction, and Chris's semi-annual reports. I just want you all aware that those are out there, okay?
Okay, then if we just kind of go through the board, if anybody has a comment, I'll start with you, Ray.
Okay, I guess mine is more of like a comment or a question, but just as we were using our technology today, the pictures of the participants that are on the right side are covering up about 20% of whatever document is being shown. And I don't know whether there's a setting that can be done that would keep them separate so that they don't overlay one another, but I think that would be helpful in the future.
I think you can put it at the
top.
It
around. You can drag it around.
I can drag what around?
All our pictures. Just put your finger on them and drag them out of the way, and you can see what's under them.
Well, but yeah, as long as I have read what's on the opposite side, yeah.
I think you can put them at the very top of it, too, if you string it out lengthwise.
Maybe. Let's see. Okay,
Manny, have you got any questions or comments? Or
No. Great job, Chairperson. You did a great job controlling this this natural event here that we had today. But no. Great job by the staff once again. Great numbers, survey. Everything is going as well as it could go, considering the circumstances that we're living under. And everyone stay safe out there. And we'll see, hopefully next month, we'll be seeing each other in person.
And Jeannie?
I just want to say I'm just so proud of our staff and everybody that's doing the job they're doing under the circumstances. This was... a good meeting. I was very happy with everything that happened. We got a few technical blurps, but other than that, good job, Kathleen. And like Manny said, hopefully next month we can do it in person. So be safe
and
stay
Ethel?
Well.
Ethel?
Many thanks to everyone that, even with the little problems we had. And hope to see everybody soon. Take care of yourselves.
Okay. And I just want to thank all the employees. Y'all have done a great job of keeping us up and running and staying ahead of the wave that was coming. And also wish Jeannie well. I'm on Monday, and we'll all be thinking about you.
Madam Chair, you need to adjourn the meeting.
You're muted, Madam Chair.
Oh. Well, I don't know where I got muted in there.
I move we adjourn.
I don't think we have to move that. I think I just touched my thing inadvertently before I said I adjourn the meeting.
Okay.
So I'll try again and adjourn the meeting.
Okay.
Bye-bye, everybody.
Bye-bye, everyone. Stay safe.
Are we still on?